The government declares an oil disaster.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. BP has scheduled another attempt tomorrow to stop the leaking oil well in the Gulf of Mexico. Meanwhile, the U.S. government has declared a fishery disaster in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Marketplace's Janet Babin joins us live. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Bill.
So this disaster declaration, what is that going to mean?
Well, essentially, it's going to free up federal money to help these fishing communities to try to somehow bounce back economically. BP announced yesterday that it, too, is trying to mitigate the economic consequences. Here's BP's chief operating officer, Doug Suttles. He was speaking at a news conference yesterday afternoon.
We've paid approximately $30 million in claims to date. We have over 400 claim agents out in the four-state region. The majority of our claims continue to come in from the state of Louisiana, and most of those claims are for lost income.
Janet, a frustration seems to be growing over the Obama administration's reliance on BP to stop the leak. Is there any move to shift strategy?
Well, federal officials are in a rage, Bill, but yesterday the Coast Guard official in charge, Thad Allen, said BP needs to lead this operation. He said the government just doesn't have the expertise or equipment that they would need to take over. We may hear more about that this morning. The House Natural Resources Committee holds a hearing on this deepwater disaster.
Marketplace's Janet Babin, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The former president of Shell Oil happens to be out with a new book today called Why We Hate the Oil Companies. John Hoffmeister, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You have called for more offshore oil drilling, including deep water drilling. How does this BP spill affect your stand?
I think it risks it considerably. The reason for more offshore drilling is the fact that over the course of the next 10, 20, even 30 years, this nation's going to continue to rely upon domestically produced oil reserves. And if we somehow reduce offshore drilling because of the BP spill, we will be transferring additional hundreds of billions of dollars to foreign countries rather than developing jobs here in America.
What about the argument that we have to push ourselves away from the oil table or we just keep slurping?
I hear that argument and I agree with it. In the fullness of time. And what do I mean by the fullness of time? Within 50 years, we will be using much, much less oil than we do today. And in the book, I call for the end of the internal combustion engine within the next 20 to 25 years.
As a former oil executive, what do you know about energy policy that you feel like Americans don't understand?
We have far more oil than the president is implying. I call that disinformation. That's wrong for elected officials to tell the American people something that's simply not true.
Aren't oil finds not only not a sure thing, but as we found out these last several weeks, very dangerous?
Well, there's another question that you could raise in this regard. Why are we in the deep water offshore to begin with, when we could be either in the shallow offshore, far less risky, we could be onshore, on federal lands, drilling for oil? There are huge, huge volumes of reserves to be developed, but these are all put off limits by public policy. And if I were to be cynical about it, I would say it's out of sight, out of mind, therefore nobody cares. Well, when there's a blowout, a lot of people care.
John Hoffmeister is former president of Shell Oil and author of the new book, Why We Hate the Oil Companies. John, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now we do the sliding numbers. Another big sell-off around the world today following yesterday's Wall Street drop. Asian stocks fell 2-3% overnight. European shares are down that much right now. The euro continues sliding, and investors seem ever nervouser about the whole global recovery. Oil is now below $68 a barrel. That's a drop of 22% just this month. Yesterday, the Dow lost 126 points, leaving it at 10,066. That's the lowest close for the Dow since February.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at Vanguard.com. by Citrix, offering GoToMeeting, allowing people to present, demonstrate, and train online. More at GoToMeeting.com/market. And by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com.
The government has been getting tougher on insurance companies in the last few months, denying them the giant rate increases they are accustomed to. Well, now insurers are vowing to get tough on hospitals. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner has the story.
10 years ago in Boston, insurance companies learned a hard lesson. When the insurance company Tufts Health Plan refused to pay the larger reimbursements that a group of popular hospitals were demanding, the hospitals responded by refusing to take Tufts insurance anymore. A few days later, Tufts' CEO at the time, Harris Berman, got a call from his biggest customer,
General Electric, saying they really appreciated the fact that I was trying to hold the line on costs, but unless we got back to the table, they were going to have to switch insurers.
So Tufts crawled back and paid the hospital's price. Since then, hospital prices in the city have almost doubled. This year, Tufts and other insurance companies across the country say they won't back down during contract negotiations so quickly.
The tide is changing.
Colin Drozdowski is with the insurance giant Anthem Wellpoint. He says customers know more than they did a decade ago about rising healthcare costs. He says if hospitals try to freeze insurers out of the network, most customers will stick with their plans and change doctors rather than see their premiums keep climbing. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
And finally, the New York Times reports 51 New York City bus drivers went on paid leave last year after being spit on by passengers. The increase in spittle attacks is bad enough for the drivers, but it's also affecting the transit system's budget, since those drivers took an average 64 days off work with pay. One transit expert blames the spitting on what he calls aisle rage, frustration over decreasing transit service and increasing costs. The article notes how they deal with similar offenders in London. Police there collect the spitter's DNA. For Marketplace, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.